It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a preview of a new WPR podcast launching today called WPR Reports Uprooted, which explores the lives of Cubans in Wisconsin.
Imagine you're a 16-year-old kid thousands of miles from home. You've just stepped off a plane in Wisconsin. For the next few months, you'll be living at an army base. There are strangers, people who don't speak your language. It feels like you're living in prison. Your whole world has been uprooted. You think you're alone, far from family and friends, when suddenly you discover your father, who you've barely had a relationship with, is also at this military base in Wisconsin. This was the reality for Armando Rodriguez, who left his barracks at Fort McCoy daily to meet with his father, Guillermo Rodriguez.
I saw my dad on the other side of the fence, and we talked from afar. And we spent about a month and some like that.
Armando and Guillermo are from Cuba and had to live at Fort McCoy until they found a home in the United States. They were here in Sparta, Wisconsin, because of the Mariel boatlift. For 5 months in 1980, the Cuban government opened its borders and let its residents leave for the U.S. during the height of the Cold War. Almost 125,000 Cubans fled the island and landed in South Florida by boat.
She says more craft are expected to make the journey in what could build into a Dunkirk-like evacuation.
Because of that, the president yesterday declared a state of emergency in southern Florida.
There's a hopeful feeling that they will be allowed to stay in this country and to find jobs.
Many refugees left their homeland to find a better opportunity or escape Fidel Castro's communist government. Some wanted to be reunited with family. Others were plucked from jail and pushed onto boats.
We arrived here in Key West, and then we arrived at Fort McCoy. In Fort McCoy, I stayed for 5 months.
Armando was one of the nearly 15,000 people sent to Fort McCoy in Wisconsin before he found a home. Most of the Cubans who came to Wisconsin left the area after connecting with family or finding sponsors. But some people, like Armando, remained in southern Wisconsin. They created lives here as bus drivers, fathers, and musicians. Now, 42 years later, many of the refugees want to visit Cuba. People like Armando want to go just one more time. But they can't.
I've never been able to visit Cuba. I would like to visit Cuba. I'm not allowed to go. And if I go, I can't come back. I'm in the same situation as everyone else who has committed a crime.
His friends in Wisconsin feel the same.
I'm 63 years old. Wow, times go fast, you know. And I haven't given up. I have faith.
The immigration, you know, give us a second chance. Why can those Cubans get a second chance?
Do you want to go back and visit also?
Yeah, I want to go see my mama before she died.
I can go to Cuba.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, I can go. Because I was lucky. I never committed a crime. The only problem is when I want to do my passport, I talk to my sister to send my birth certificate. And when I see my birth certificate, that's wrong. That's not my name.
Because when I tried to kill him, I always say, you know, the reason I did it because I want to go back to Cuba.
I'm Maureen McCollum, and this is Uprooted, a new podcast from Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll hear from Cuban Wisconsinites who arrived here more than 40 years ago. These are the unheard voices behind the headlines. What were their lives like in Cuba? What was the journey like across the sea? What has life been like in Wisconsin? And after 40 years, where do they go from here? Subscribe to Uprooted wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see more at WPR.org/uprooted. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kedar Chirkent. Now time to check in on the Packers and the world of sports. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers wasn't down with the locker room talk after falling to the New York Giants Sunday, telling reporters after the loss.
I'm a firm believer in the power of words and manifestation, and we got to check ourselves on that because talking about that is not, that's not winning football.
Joining in on the Pack and what you're a firm believer in with a 3-2 record heading into Sunday's matchup with the Jets, 800-642-1234. Justice Cleveland is here, sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Justice, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, before we get to the Pack, let's talk about these concussion rules. The league making this mid-season change in rules and the Players Association agreeing to update the concussion protocol. What does this decision mean?
I think it means we're not going to have any more incidences like we had with the Dolphins 2 weeks ago, where Tua gets taken down the week before. Mm-hmm. And then comes out and get, you know, on national TV in a spotlight, has one of the worst concussions, I think, injuries that you've ever seen in the NFL. That it's a horrible look for the league. So it's good that they're making this adjustment during the season, but obviously you would have liked to have seen it before the season. So something like that just doesn't happen.
How long are NFL players out for a concussion? What does the new protocol say?
Well, generally, it's for a week. You know, it's a week. They're put in protocol and they're monitored. They have to pass the baseline tests. I think what they're trying to do now is just make it a little more strict to make sure that people can't get out early. I think that with Tua, that was what a lot of people said. They couldn't believe after he stumbled and fell to the ground a week before that he was back on the field on a Thursday night game. So I think the big thing is they're trying to tighten things up and just making sure that something like that can't happen again.
You see the term ataxia in the protocols, that if they show signs of ataxia, they're prohibited from returning to a game. You talked about staggering there. What are the symptoms being used by the NFL?
Oh, boy. Not being a medical expert, per se, but yeah, I think, if you see anything that shows that there could be something going on with the brain, that you need to, you know, and I think you'd have to have that outside independent person being able to make that call. So as the players are going to try to get out on the field, and that's in their mentality, is that they want to go out there and play. But you need to have somebody in there that if they see anything that says, okay, no, something cognitive is being disrupted here, he's got to be out. So yeah, I think it's one of those things where they, again, are just trying to make sure that if there's anything, and I think the last couple of weeks we've actually seen it, where they've taken guys out and said, no, you're not going back in. I believe Teddy Bridgewater, who's also the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, didn't show any signs, but from what they saw on the play, they held him out the rest of the game. So I'm okay with that. I mean, you need to be with an overabundance of caution because of the history that comes with concussions in the NFL.
One more thing I want to run by you here, Justice. The roughing the passer penalty is coming under greater scrutiny as to how that's being used to protect quarterbacks from these bad hits. What do you make of how this penalty is being used and when it's being called?
And that's one of the toughest things. Obviously, you want to protect these quarterbacks, and you don't want to see anybody have another situation like you had with Tua in Miami, but they've also, it's such a, the interpretation of the rules, and we saw it twice last week, Tom Brady on one where it didn't even look like there was anything really to call there. And then you have another one on Monday Night Football where you have a ball being fumbled and a player trying to get that ball, but also landing on top of the quarterback and getting a penalty for that. So it is such a slippery slope between protecting and still having the integrity of the game. So I think it would be something that, and I've heard this mentioned many times, something that could be up for review, something you could take a look at after it's happened and say, okay, no, that's not roughing. And that way you're not just calling this penalty and not really having a second chance to look at what ended up happening. I know the Packers a few years ago now, it was when Clay Matthews was playing for him, he had three or four of those penalties called in the first 2 weeks where they said that he was landing with his full weight on the quarterback. And you'd look at a review and you'd be like, what's he supposed to do? You got a 250-pound person whose job it is to jump on top of another person, but then is not supposed to jump with full force. Football being a violent sport, it's such a slippery slope between safety and that inherent violence.
And a call that can change the course of a game exactly. and the outcome. Well, let's turn to Packers, falling to the New York Giants in London. And Aaron Rodgers talked about conversations happening in the locker room. He said it revolved around players saying they could potentially lose to the Jets this Sunday.
I'm not going to address prospects of losing up here, other than we just lost this game. Offensively, we haven't put two halves together. There's a lot that factors into that. You know, everything from calls to execution, to the momentum, to defensive stops.
Okay, so how do you move on to the Jets and be in that mindset that Rodgers wants the guys to be in?
Well, what they have to look at is that they were basically embarrassed in London there in the second half against the Giants. And I think you got to look at it as kind of like a wake-up call. And I think that second half of that game will be for the team. So I think it's one of those like, okay, we're a good team, but I think they've been resting on their laurels a little too much and not stepping up, and teams are adjusting, and they didn't really adjust in that game. So they should be a very motivated team coming into Sunday. It's another opponent that on paper they have much more going for them than they do the Jets, but as they always say, and I go into cliche, games aren't played on paper. So, but yeah, and this is a team that has a lot of young players in it, had a lot of hype coming into the season. And yes, they're 3-2, but they've had a lot of lulls in their games that have allowed teams to come back. So they've won ugly, and last week they lost ugly.
Lisa from Milwaukee called and couldn't stay and said that players are concerned about losing their jobs, so they continue to play even through injuries. That has consequences, though, Justice.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And I think that is a big part of it, too, is these guys know that there's only, you have 53 spots on each team. Mm-hmm. So your chances of being in this league are slim. Once you get one of those jobs, holding on to one of those jobs is slim too. So I think, yeah, you got to protect the players from themselves. And I think that's what the league's trying to do, is to make sure that you don't have these guys going out there and doing more damage to their bodies.
We have WEAU TV sports director Justice Cleveland, our guide to the pack, college football standings, and more coming up. Join in with your takeaways, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our wide world of Wisconsin sports conversation and what sports director Justice Cleveland of WEAU-TV is paying attention to at this point in seasons. Still time for your thoughts as a fan, 800-642-1234. Justice stays with us. Okay, we turn to the Badgers and your hot take on the firing of Paul Chryst after a 2-3 start to the season, the program's first firing since 89. Why was Paul Chryst fired?
In the short, they weren't making the progress that they wanted to see. I think those two losses to Ohio State, a top three team, and then Illinois, I think the Illinois one probably hurt even more because it was Brett Bielema coming back and a former coach that you needed to bounce back from a bad loss to Ohio State. Unfortunately, they went and had an even maybe worse loss to Illinois. So I think that, and I'm sure the boosters were making noise after that. And in college football, the boosters tend to wield a lot of power. Mm-hmm. So I think that ended up hurting it. And the team offensively had struggled last year, went and made changes, and arguably was worse this year. So I think there was just a lot of factors that were checking the boxes there, and they're like, okay, maybe it's time to make a change. And they had a guy in Jim Leonard who was in-house that's been up for jobs in the NFL and in college and has chose to stay with the Badgers. And I think it was, okay, well, we have him here. Let's give him a chance to see what he can do.
Well, let's hear a bit of Leonard at the press conference after the Northwestern game.
The emotions early in the week were hard to handle for some guys and the coaches, and for us to rally and be able to compartmentalize that and get the work done that we needed to get done, focus on the improvement when we needed to do that, and then handle the emotions, when allowed.
So, you know, he's talking about having the guys compartmentalize their emotions. And he said, you know, the firing hurt a lot of guys. And Leonard was like, there's really little I can do in that moment to say in that moment. So what does it mean for the player's mentality here?
Oh, it's got to be very tough because this is the guy who brought you in. And even, you know, Jim Leonard said it in his opening press conference when he was announced that, you know, Paul Chryst took a chance on him with no experience to bring him into his coaching staff and had his support. So I think he was very emotional in that moment, too. I think Paul Chryst is a guy who's very much liked by a lot of people. And I think it was hard for that because, you know, he goes around as being this, you know, really nice guy. But unfortunately, that's the reality of sports is that if you're not winning, you can be gone the next day. So I think for a lot of it was maybe a reality check for not just, you know, Jim Leonard, but those players as well, just how quick things can change in the world of sports.
How will coaching change, you know, affect what we see on the field? I mean, you got Badgers at Michigan State Saturday. What do you expect?
I mean, this is another game that they should be able to come out with a win. I mean, it's tough going on the road, but it looked just at last week's game, they really showed it was a different team that seemed a little looser, which sometimes in sports is a good thing. You don't want to get too loose, but I think the way they played, the emotion that they were showing, that they're a little, it's a different team mentality maybe with Jim Leonard at the helm. And I think a lot of times you'll see that with the first week when there's a coaching change because guys are very emotional, as they were talking about before. If they can sustain it, we'll see here at Michigan State. Michigan State's not having a great season as well. So, again, it's a win. It's a game that the Badgers look like they should be able to win.
Okay. Well, I'm so eager here. I want to move to all the way to the Bucks and, you know, lost last night against the Bulls. What are your takeaways from that game and as we head into the season for Giannis and company?
I mean, preseason. I don't know how much you want to take too much away from it. That's my
look. I like that mentality.
They're 0-4. I don't see them being 0-4 to the start of the regular season. So I think it's just, you know, getting a chance to get these guys out there. And really, I mean, the Bucks, it was all bench guys that played in that game. Honestly, I mean, there's not a guy who is a starter that played yesterday. So I think that's one of the big things. Whereas the Bulls were playing their starters, and though, hey, you know what? I'll give credit. If the bench guys can score over 100 points against the Bulls starters, that's not bad. So,
okay.
No, I think this is a team that's going to battle for a chance for that Eastern Conference title. They bring back a lot of that same core that they have had the last few years, obviously, with the championship.
The big three, yeah. Giannis, right. And Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday. I mean, will they have those big three on the floor when it matters? You know, that is the question.
Yeah, and I think last year in the playoffs, we saw the biggest thing is when Chris Middleton was gone. Mm-hmm. They had a tough time adjusting and throwing guys in there to take his spot because he's that good of a player. I don't think he gets as much credit for how good of a player he is. He's an all-star player. And when you lose something like that in the playoffs, in the midst of, you know, the most competitive games you're going to play all season, it's going to make a huge difference. So if everybody can stay healthy, I mean, the potential's there to be back where they were 2 years ago. But again, health is always the biggest factor in a lot of sports. And obviously in the NBA, it is too.
Giannis said it's nice to have the same people around, people that you've won a championship with. So he feels like he's in good company.
Yeah, and you don't see that a whole lot in the NBA, honestly. I mean, for guys are a lot of the time on the move, but mm-hmm. I think that's credit to the Bucks is that they've created this atmosphere where these guys want to stay, where a guy like George Hill, who was gone, comes back because he wants to play there. You have Brooke Lopez, who, you know, comes back from major back surgery, but still wants to play. So I think, and Bobby Portis comes back too. So to me, that's huge. That shows that you're doing something well, not only on the floor, but with the culture of your team.
Justice Cleveland here giving us a roundup on football, basketball. We'll move to baseball and the Brewers next. Sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. So the Brewers missed the playoffs despite that 10th inning win against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's listen at that final play.
Line drive, base hit, ball game. Hunter Renfro delivers for the Brewers. A 6-5 walk-off victory here tonight against the Arizona Diamondbacks.
So the Brewers beat the Diamondbacks. Why did the team miss the playoffs?
I think it comes down to hitting. They had enough pitching. They had some really good pitching, starting pitching, I will say. Hitting and relief pitching, though, is where at times they struggled. They were reliant on the home run ball. So if they weren't getting home runs, they weren't really scoring runs. And the second half, the bullpen just wasn't the same bullpen they had in the first half. Obviously, people can point to the Josh Hader trade. And it's not like Josh Hader went to San Diego and had the greatest second half either. So I don't know how much that even would have factored into it. It was just the middle relief and just, you know, losing those close games that ended up costing them a chance to be in the playoffs. You win four more games, you win two more games, you're in the playoffs. So 86 and 76 isn't anything bad, but it's just one of those where they just didn't have enough horses as it comes to hitting to I think, overturn all the close losses.
In our final moments left here, Brewers, they won't be back together until spring training in 4 months or so, but the core members of the team will be there. And what difference do you think that will make for next season?
I think it'll be big. I think we saw a little bit of Christian Yelich coming back to form in the second half of the season. I do think they need to add somebody else in there with the rule changes that are coming without the shift and stuff, that somebody who can make contact and hit for a higher average than 250, which was like the highest on the Brewers.
Okay, so we'll be watching for that. Justice, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was always fun. It always is.
Justice Cleveland is a sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. As we do the roundup of Wisconsin sports, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.